I like to play blackjack. I'm not addicted to gambling. I'm addicted to sitting in a semicircle.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Brent. I like gambling and I'm horny as hell.
Welcome to the Bets and Quotes podcast, a podcast for the rubes, by the rubes, talking all things Power Trip. Bets and Quotes is hosted by Chuck, better known as Power Trip Bets, and Dave, the one and only Power Trip Quotes. They were going to get an apartment together and see how things went, but settled on a podcast instead. Our legal disclaimer is simply that Lawyer Lambert probably likes us better than you, so good luck suing us. We hope you enjoy this episode, but if not, feel free to play Jax on 494.
All right, Dave, we got to give a score update for our number one listener, Lou Cove. Lou, your Twins are up 5-0 in the bottom of the ninth at Pittsburgh. So it looks like the Twins are going to move to 9-2, and it looks like they are going to hit their eighth under in the last nine games.
Oh, I mean, we got a miracle under the other night. Otherwise, it could have been 9 in a row. But yeah, what the hell? Why is their pitching so good?
I know, that's the one thing that I absolutely did not count on. And actually, their hitting has gone away after about the fifth inning. It's like right. The last four innings of the game, it's just like scoreless. It's like whatever the score is after five, that's pretty much your final. So
maybe that's what we should go with, is the Twins over first five innings.
I know a lot of people play the first five because they don't want to. They just want to worry about the starting pitchers and they don't want to worry about the bullpen. But yeah, alas, I'm sticking to the bit. I'm going down with the ship, man.
Oh, me too. It's just like, be nice if this was a profitable thing, you know?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, by the time you guys hear this, it will probably already be mostly over. But talk about the day that we have tomorrow in the sports world. I mean, holy cow. We've got a wild playoff game during the afternoon. We've got a Twins game during the afternoon tomorrow. We've got day one of a major golf championship, the first one of 2020. I mean, holy crap, what a day. I think I might just have to take the afternoon off because I'm not getting anything done anyway. So what a bunch of stuff to watch and bet on tomorrow.
Oh, I know. It's like if you had a Buffalo Wild Wings in your basement, this is the optimal, like, this is the optimal time for that. But yeah, I will definitely be worthless tomorrow afternoon at work.
Oh, for sure. I'm like, it's not even close that I'm going to get a thing done tomorrow. And the one thing I am going to have to keep my eye on tomorrow, of course, is the hockey betting. So I'll give you an update on that real quick. So the first eight games were just the establishment games. So we were just taking the straight underdog. And the underdogs actually went 5-3 in the first eight games. So whether I was doing the underdog strategy or the flip-flop strategy, went 5-3 because it was the same eight picks for those. And then we started to diverge a little bit. So I kept betting the underdogs, and I also kept track of the flip-flop. And after just like four games into it, I realized the flip-flop is definitely the way to go. It was immediately kicking the underdog's ass. And so I have officially gone with the flip-flop for the rest of the playoffs, which again is simply betting the opposite of whichever team won the last game. So if, you know, like in this case, when Minnesota won, I bet Vancouver in the next game. And now that Vancouver won, I will be betting Minnesota tomorrow. So
interesting.
Yeah, just going back and forth. To give you just the live numbers as I'm looking at them right now, the underdog strategy has lost 1%, which is basically $1 for every $100 that you bet. So almost exactly even. The flip-flop strategy, on the other hand, is up 42%. So that means you're winning $42 for every $100 you bet, which is really, really good. That's 2018 levels in terms of the bet the road team strategy. So yeah, so we're going to be going with the flip-flop the rest of the way and just betting on whichever team lost the time before and hope that there's not a lot of sweeps, because sweeps are going to be bad for the old flip-flop.
Yeah. So how are you going to do it? Like, you started with the dog in game one. Are you going to do that with the next round of series as well?
Yep. Just whoever, okay. whoever you get better, better odds on. Just
so start with better odds and then go flip flop.
And then go flip flop. So yeah. So we'll keep tracking that. God, I would love if that 40% held up. I don't think it will. I think there'll be some reversion to the mean, but yeah, it definitely is the clear winner at this point. So, and there is all sorts of gambling to talk about in the bets update. So we'll get to that here shortly. We're going to do the bets update tonight. We're going to have the quotes of the week. And then we had a chance to talk to Tyler George from the 2018 Olympic gold medal champion curling team. Of course, you guys know him from the Power Trip and his dominance at initials. So we talked to Tyler about a whole bunch of different issues, and he's a pretty awesome dude. So hopefully you enjoyed that interview. We also would like to thank our Patreon listeners, and we've had a lot of fun during games 1 and 2. Now, we're not going to do anything for game 3 because it's a day game and people have weird schedules during the day. But Dave, I've been enjoying these little happy hours with our patrons.
I think it's the best and only good idea I've ever come up with in my life. So I'm going to take a little bit of credit for that. But yeah, no, it's been really fun. Obviously in this kind of, you know, with all the COVID stuff going on, it's hard to like get together with a bunch of buddies and, you know, go out to the bar and watch the game together. But this kind of brings that to everyone's house and, yeah, you can join with audio, join with video. You know, we talk a lot about the show and, obviously about the game itself, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we almost had like an epic finish last night with the wild late comeback, but unfortunately it fell about 7.5 seconds short. So I don't think anybody would have made it through overtime anyway.
No,
we all would have been like dozing off during overtime anyway. But yeah, that was fun. So thank you guys all for doing that, and we're definitely gonna do more of those in the future, and who knows, maybe we will have some baseball playoff happy hours as well. That would be kick ass, because it looks like that's definitely a possibility at this point.
For sure.
All right, well, let's get to some bets.
Here's this week in Power Trip Bets.
Power Trip Bets. Power Trip Bets.
Power Trip Bets.
Power Trip Bets, though. Power Trip Odds.
All right, well, we got quite a few bets to talk about this week. We'll get this one out of the way right away. Chris was actually able to successfully name over 1.5 Minnesota Wild players. So another one of those, let's see what Chris knows for a dollar bets, and Corey won that. Chris actually named 4 Wild players without getting any wrong, so pretty good, pretty good. So Corey got yet another $1 Venmo from Meat Sauce.
I do love the dollar bets. The dollar bets are great.
Hey, why not? Especially because the theme is what does Chris know? So
exactly.
<that's> perfect. The other hockey bet that we got going on, it was the first hockey bet on the Power Trip in 3 years. Way overdue, in my opinion. Sauce has Vancouver for the series, and Corey has the Wild for $100. So that's obviously with the series currently tied 1-1. That's gonna be an interesting bet, and probably might go right down to game 5. So we'll see on that one. The next bet I want to talk about was the over under 25.5 home runs between Bonus and Corey. We'll just kind of look in and see who's leading the pack every week. And right now, it happens to be none other than Aaron Judge, who has 7 home runs in 10 games. So he is on a pace to hit 42, which is still comfortably on the over.
42 home runs.
Yeah, and you keep thinking, you know, like, oh, yeah, you know, this season's so early. But, you know, 2 more games and the Yankees have played 20% of their season. I mean, it's going to eat up fast. And you think about it, he's already hit 7. He only needs, you know, 19 more to hit the over at this point. So he's more than 25% of the way to the total. So, yeah, and there's quite a few guys at 6 and stuff, too. So as of right now, Bonus is still kind of holding on to that. But, of course, paces tend to revert to the mean. But we'll see. It's definitely going to be interesting. It's definitely not going to be one of those where it's a early lock for Corey. I think it's going to go down probably to the last week or so, potentially. And no. the final bet I want to talk about was the old PGA Championship bet. So of course the PGA Championship is this week, first major of 2020 with all the cancellations and rescheduling. So yeah, we're finally getting a major, and of course the crew bet on it. So we've got, I believe, 11 participants. So if we get a double up, this could be a $2,000 pot for the winner. If somebody wins this and hits the total, which obviously would be the biggest Power Trip bet win, eclipsing the record set just a couple weeks ago by John Kreisel. So yeah, big field of participants. And one of the best things about golf betting is this is Marnie's first major that she is participating in. And I just happened to pull this audio. You gotta love Marnie's little giggle here.
The most you can lose is 225, or you could lose 125, or
but
you could lose 100.
Win.
Or you could win a ton. Mm-hmm.
Or you could, yeah, this could be $2,200 or something. Like
I love, but what can I win?
That is the giggle of a woman who is discovering how wonderful it is to bet with the Power Trip.
Oh, I love it.
Who did you end up with in our little Twitter friends bet?
I got Mr. Corey Cove's favorite, John Rahm, with the fifth or sixth pick, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty darn good value. Yeah, I think you'll like that. I ended up I was at the lower end of the draw, and I ended up with Matsuyama. So yeah, a little bit of a longer shot, but hopefully he's a guy that I think will make the cut, because last time I didn't even make the cut, and that cost me the extra little bonus on that. So, but yes, it will be fun to sit and watch a major golf championship, Twins baseball, and a Wild hockey playoff series all in the same weekend. Our brains are going to get overloaded, Dave, because we've gone from like literally no sports at all to like just a mass. And you still got the Loons playing in that little MLS Cup series as well. They're in the semifinals. So it could be one hell of a weekend in Minnesota sports.
Yeah, it's going to be great too. And I mean, I know nobody cares about soccer, but like the Champions League is starting up here. Like sports. Our whole lives are now just sports.
And hot off the presses, I just got this. Diamond Joe, I just sent out a tweet about this. Diamond Joe has posted several of the Gopher games for 2020. Five different lines for some of the Gopher games on the revised schedule. So some examples include they are 7.5-point dogs at Wisconsin. They're 1-point dogs at home against Michigan. And then they're favored on the road against Nebraska by 3. So, so some interesting early lines getting put out there. It's really, really starting to give me the old itch for football season as well. Hopefully they can keep the protocols in place so that we have a meaningful college and pro football season this year. But always fun to see some football lines, that's for sure.
Hell yeah. Cross our fingers, if we all be good and wear our masks and, you know, shut the hell up, then we'll get football.
That's for sure. Like Brian Johnson has his masks equal football tagline on Twitter. So, yes. Brilliantly done. All right, well, that will do it for the bets update. It is time for some quotes.
They're memorable. They're timeless. They'll probably get meat sauce fired. It's time for the quotes of the week.
Power Trip quotes. Power Trip quotes.
Power Trip quotes.
Power Trip quotes.
Power Trip quotes.
All right, friends, it is time for the quotes of the week. And we will start at number 3 with Chris Hockey.
They don't have that there.
No, ice cream.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
God, I'd love to watch you freeze to death, meat sauce.
Oh, I just love that. Started talking about the Titanic and meat sauce starts rambling. And it just, God, I'd love to watch you drown, meat sauce.
I'd love to watch you freeze to death. Yeah. Oh. It's so brilliant.
Oh, that's so funny. Just caught sauce so off guard, too. He's like, what?
Yeah, it caught me off guard, too. I was like, freeze to death. Oh, Titanic, duh. You know?
Oh, so good.
Brilliant.
All right, we will move to number 2, and it is the maestro, Corey Cove.
watched.
Yeah, I feel a little weird about your sticky tongue, but I'm glad you could sit on the chair on the other side of the room.
My sources say no one sits on Sauce's face.
Well, that got weird.
Eat out to help out.
What?
Oh, Kermit made the quotes of the week.
I was going to say, that's really a Kermit the Frog quote of the week and not just Corey. So, yeah, that's an in-character impression that made the quotes of the week.
Right.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I know. I should have just quoted Kermit, you know, the @KermitTheFrog Twitter account. But
yeah, that was good.
All right. We will move to number one, and it is the magnetic Paul Meat Sauce Lambert.
Wow.
It's going 1,400 miles an hour.
That's so fast.
It really is, Paul.
That's almost the speed of sound.
Oh, here's Houston.
Good luck out there.
Oh, yeah. Do you have any of the unarmed people inside?
They don't have arms?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Tomorrow they're going to launch Creasel into the air.
This is the most incredibly...
Bill, you have to push the button!
I love. Oh, so that was obviously the day that the day after Sauce got the award, and
yep.
I loved Chris adding to that with his zzz, like his electricity, like magnetic sounder.
Oh God, yeah, he was in love with that sounder. It was like I kept thinking I was gonna get shocked by my phone while I was listening to the episode. It was just the whole time. So
and a man-made button bar, by the way, too.
Yeah.
There was one guy on Twitter. I think it's @onebadlama who replied to that quote with he photoshopped GIF of still like shooting into space. It was so funny.
Oh my.
I just laughed my ass off.
Anyways, that was good.
There are your quotes of the week.
It's time for the weekly segment of Your Thoughts. Copyright Dark Star.
All right. Well, we've got our interview with Tyler George, so let's get to it. All right. Well, we are thrilled to be joined by Power Trip friend, and most importantly, 2018 Olympic gold medalist, Tyler George. Tyler, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing pretty good. Just settling into the new house here. It's been a couple of months. And the first things first, I got the bar set up and I got the deck set up. And then the rest of it kind of comes along slowly. But getting used to living by myself. And especially during a pandemic when not able to travel for work or anything else, it's a little bit bizarre, but it's an adjustment that I've been making, and it's a good spot. Happy to be here, but obviously wish I could get out and see people more often and get back to promoting the great game of curling.
Well, Power Trip Nation is definitely glad that you have your priorities in order and got the bar set up first. I think everyone is very proud of you. That's definitely on brand. So, I was going to ask you how your role as ambassador for USA Curling has been affected. Obviously, you're probably not traveling as much. Are you able to still like do Zoom meetings? Are you meeting with people? What does your role look like right now? And what has your role looked like in the past prior to the pandemic?
The things that I do for the ambassador position nowadays are kind of few and far between. I'll do some Zoom things here and there with some curling clubs, just hang out with people, watch some old games every once in a while. But the majority of what I've been doing, at least with regard to curling now, is with a brand new program they've started called the U25 program. So it's our athletes that age out of juniors, which is 21 and under, and are trying to make that transition to the men's and women's game on the tour level, the elite level of the sport. So we're trying to keep that young talent involved and not lose them to the real world, which obviously we still want them to be able to finish up college and join the workforce and everything. But that's been a problem for us in USA Curling in the past, is when kids age out of juniors, then they fade out of the sport. So this program is designed to not just keep them from leaving, but to develop them into our Olympic hopefuls for the future. So myself and my old friend Jordan Moulton are the co-directors of this program, something we hope develops into something bigger in the future when we get more funding from the USOC. But it's a great start. Really happy to be doing it. And obviously it keeps me busier than I would have been otherwise. So high hopes for this program for future years for USA Curling.
So what is your current, curling look like? Are you doing a lot of curling yourself? Like, are the clubs in Duluth open at this point? Are you doing any like actual curling yourself?
Well, the clubs, for our club here in Duluth, our season is basically mid-October through end of March. So I don't think they've made any hard decisions on what they're going to do curling-wise in Duluth. The club in Blaine is open. The club in Chaska is open, but there are some pretty strict regulations on what people need to do in order to even practice there. The tour season has been put on hold, but the events that are being held, which are mostly in Canada, they're not for any points right now, mm-hmm. because a lot of teams from different countries, including the United States, are not able to travel to go to those events. So it's not fair to have points available for qualification for major tournaments. All the majors have been shut down until April, I believe. That's the Grand Slam events. And for myself personally, I pretty much never play anyways. COVID has not affected the amount of curling that I do. It's the work stuff and the travel stuff, the coaching, the directing, all those things it definitely affects. But I think maybe three times last year I actually was on the ice throwing rocks. So there's a very good chance that anybody that curls at all played more than I did last year. But that was by design. Once you're out, it's very difficult to be even partway in because you're not able to compete to the level you like. So obviously when it's charity events and things that are for good causes, I'm out there as much as I possibly can. But for my own competitive nature, it'd be very difficult for me to go out there and not be able to play the way I'd like to. So I'm very happy with what I'm able to do off the ice when the current situation permits.
I will say you need to try sweeping with a mask on. That is that's a different experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've been told, yes. And that's going to be a staple of any tournaments that they actually have on tour, I think, now that masks will be involved all the time. So my good friend Colin Hodgson's curling company up in Canada, Dynasty, is now mass producing masks, and they're doing team logos on them too. So they're making it a fashion thing and a uniform thing while they're able to keep players safe when they are out there playing. And again, the amount that guys are out there actually competing is pretty small right now, but at least if you're going to try to practice and keep yourself in game shape, then they are creating avenues by which that's possible, and that's great.
Yeah, for sure. That is that's awesome to be able to keep doing that. And I will say, just from my experience, getting back on the ice, like our club opened up in early July, and getting back on the ice and having just like the smallest sense of normalcy was really cool. So I'm hoping a lot of clubs can, open up and take advantage of that, with safe protocols and stuff like that, and until we get this whole stupid COVID thing behind us. So,
yeah, well, it's difficult just to add on to that too, to temper that enthusiasm about getting back on the ice with the safety of the players too. And that's something that we have to keep in mind as directors of program, is that the safety and the well-being of our athletes has to be first and foremost. And they're the ones that want to get out there the most. So somewhere finding that middle ground, keeping them motivated, active, having them doing things that will make them better players and teammates without being on the ice is the number one goal. And then trying to help them make proper decisions, whether we're there or not, about what's safe to do, whether they can be on the ice or not. That's something that we need to take really seriously right now.
Definitely. What's the what do you feel is one of the harder things about being a coach, having been a player and obviously succeeding at the highest levels? What do you find challenging about coaching?
Obviously, right now the pandemic situation makes it difficult, where all the coaching we're doing is virtually. But I think it's trying to understand each player individually and what they need from their coaches and directors. I learned as a teammate playing with John Schuster, Matt Hamill, and John Landsteiner for 4 years that you have to treat each player a different way. I could never say the same things to John Schuster that I'd say to Matt Hamilton. It just, mm-hmm. you know, they're completely different personalities. So teaching younger players how to do that. We learned it later on in our careers, at least how to be better at it. But having, you know, 21 to 25 year olds learn how to judge their teammates' personalities, know what you can say to them, what you can't, where they like to be talked to, what kind of encouragement they want, if they can handle criticism, if they need a rah-rah cheerleader. I mean, just the different things that each teammate needs from you. So you have to adjust to them and still at the same time, make it apparent to your teammates what you need from them too. So teaching younger players how to do that is a little bit different than players that are more experienced. So I think that's the biggest adjustment it's been for me so far. That and distancing yourself from the attitude of being a part of the team or being deeply involved in the playing side of the curling community. You're so used to it being one big group, and it's really easy to fall into that as a coach too. So you really need to create space between yourself and your team so that they're able to do their thing and not have you around all the time. But it's so, that's a very unusual thing in the curling world. So trying to make sure they know that we're there for them, anything they need, but still be at a distance so they have their space to grow as players and to not feel like their coaches and directors are around all the time. You know, finding that happy medium somewhere in there is a difficult balance. And I think that's been the toughest thing for me so far.
So the key question becomes then, so after a bond spiel, is the coach allowed to drink with the team?
That's actually a hard no. That's a difference from things in the past. I think that was very commonplace in any part of USA Curling, whether it was obviously the club level. That's, you know, there aren't a whole lot of coaches around, but for elite playing, I think you saw a lot of the coaches spending more time with the players afterwards too. And that's something that we're really trying to get away from. So, you know, the coaches can hang out with each other, obviously on tour, but again, we want the players to feel like they have their own space and their own time. And, you know, it, just to be blunt, I mean, bad things can happen with especially younger players being around older players or coaches mm-hmm. or whatever. And that atmosphere being that familiar. So, you know, not so much that there's actual things happen, but rumors get started very easily in those mm-hmm. situations, I think. And that's something that we don't want our players to have to deal with. So, again, that space for them is very important. And that's something I think that the coaches are really comfortable with too, is now we, you know, once we have that line in the sand where the game's done, we go off our own way. But, you know, we're available for a call or anything if they need to talk to us, but they still have their space. I think that's healthy for both the players and the coaches.
It's interesting. Yeah, very interesting. So there's definitely that level of sort of professional separation between the coach and the team then.
Yeah, and I think that's something that pretty much all sports have. It's just curling is so much different in the camaraderie. That
mm-hmm, right.
It's a completely normal thing for everybody to be around each other after games. So it's an adjustment for us, but it is something that I think is long overdue for the teams, at least in the elite level, and for the older coaches working with the younger players too. So it's a good move all around, and it certainly doesn't take away from the camaraderie of the sport in that, you know, 90% of the time when we're at events or on tour, we're still able to spend time with our friends and the people that we want to see, just can't be with our own teams. And that's perfectly right. Fine.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't take you back to February of 2018. Definitely one of the favorite experiences, especially for power trippers, because, you know, myself, I was into curling beforehand. So when I found out the US curling team listened to the power trip and were actually on the power trip and calling in, it was like, holy shit, this is pretty freaking awesome, right? But I think you also opened up, you know, certainly Power Trip Nation, if not, you know, all of America, just what a fun ride it was. I mean, from that first show that you guys were on until, you know, winning the gold medal and then ultimately the infamous Manny's Dinner, it was just a fun couple of months. What do you remember about that first appearance that you and Schuster made on the Power Trip?
It was kind of a strange day. John got lost driving to the studio because it was the first time that either one of us had been there, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I know Dave Schwartz, a mutual friend of ours, John and I both know just from the sports world, is the mm-hmm. one that hooked up the appearance for us. And as somebody that listened pretty much daily at that point, I was very excited to go on. I know John was a fairly regular listener too. So it was a big deal for us. And, you know, looking back at it now, it's kind of funny because now it's just the guys, you know, they're just our friends. But, you know, the way it started is obviously it was before any of the stuff happened in Pyeongchang. So we weren't used to being in those circles or invited to do those things. John had some more experience with it just because of his past Olympic experience. But for me, it was all kind of new stuff. So if nothing else happened from getting to the Olympics, that was pretty big for me, just to be able to go on the show and say hi to those guys. And I think towards the end of the program, Corey said in passing that we should really check in from South Korea. And I don't think he actually expected us to do it. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know what, I think that'd be a really fun bit for the show, and it would keep things loose for us over in Korea, so why not? And we ended up checking in multiple times during the week and kind of taking those guys along for the ride. And I kind of in the back of my mind thought, you know, as I did with everything that we were doing over there, if we're able to succeed and we bring as many people in as possible, it's just going to be great for the sport. So having Power Trip Nation involved with that run we made, and then afterwards bring them into the fold by coming onto the show a bunch of times and you know, getting them more familiar with us as a team, it did nothing but great things for the sport. And I'm thankful to the guys in the show for that, because it really gave us a platform by which to garner support during the games and promote the sport afterwards too. So, you know, just all good stuff all around. They're great guys. You know, it was a win-win all around. It was great for their show. They got some great bits out of it. I think I called in after our win against Canada in the semis, like during the show, after they had been watching it. So, I mean, just one of those things that worked out perfectly. And thank God it finished the way it did, because it allowed us to continue to do it afterwards too.
Yeah, it was always awesome when you would call in and give your little updates and stuff. And it was I don't know how much of the shows you got to listen to, because obviously you were just a little bit busy over there. But when the matches were actually going on live and they were kind of doing some play by play or watching them, their lack of curling knowledge was beyond comical to listen to on the airwaves. So
that just put him in a group with everybody else in the world, basically, until the end of that week. But I actually did hear their play-by-play of the last couple ends that we played in the semi against Canada. I was able to listen to that when we got back from Korea. And you know, obviously, they're, you know, trying to figure it out as it was going. I think Hawk said something along the lines of, "I feel like I'm reviewing a movie I've never seen before." Yeah, it was fun because they were so invested in it, but still trying to figure it out at the same time. But that goes to show you, like, if you get yourself in front of the right people and again, you accomplish something at the right time, people will be interested in it. And it was not a gimmick thing in the least at that point. At first, I think to them, it kind of was, because they didn't know us. They didn't know the sport. They didn't know if we were medal contenders, and they really didn't know what was going on, but they thought, we can bring Olympians on. This is going to be a great bit. And then as it developed into a story out there and they got more and more invested, it was kind of a microcosm for how the country was treating us too, that
right.
They were paying more attention. They were watching the games, and it turned from a, you know, watching it kind of like, okay, it's the Olympics, let's see what's going on, to people genuinely being invested in it and identifying with us as people, because we appear to be the everyman, and you know, we act that way, and that's because that's who we are. And I think that really appealed to people. And, you know, when you feel like you get to know somebody and you think those guys are just like us, except they're really good at something, then you know, that brings a lot of people along with you. And that show where they watched the game against Canada was the best example of that. And hearing that and having them be so excited for us, you know, was really cool. That was, one of those moments that, again, and there were a million of them following the Olympics, mm-hmm. but that they make you think like this is maybe a little bit bigger than we thought it was. And then you realize you have a platform to really do something special too. And we've continued to do that for the years following.
Yeah, definitely. You definitely took the whole country because, you know, my coworkers here in Kansas and Missouri, it's like, you know, they knew everybody's name and they were having fun with the bits and they were, you know, when matches would be on, even if you guys played overnight, I would put the matches on one of my monitors at work and just do like the replay from like the NBC site and stuff. And it was like, it was really cool to kind of see their knowledge build and them get to do it. And actually a couple of them have come to some of our Learn to Curls, you know, so your reach has definitely been huge in that. And I will say I was invested from day one because I'm the guy that bet on you guys that first day you went to studio.
I did not forget that. I was wondering when you were going to bring that up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Power Trip Bets. I mean, that's one of the all-timers there.
I was, 16-1. I'm like, you know, you got to take that at 16-1. They're giving you a decent chance.
I think one of my buddies got us at 20-1, which, again, if you're strictly looking at it on the gambling side of things, which I can talk about now post-tournament, but I couldn't before, you know, getting us at those odds was a very sharp move because we had finished in the top five at the last three world championships. We're the only country in the world to do that, mm-hmm. Or only team in the world to do that, I should say. I think Canada and Sweden had done the same for the country, but we were the only same four guys to go back and do it. Canada's team changes fairly often. And I think Sweden missed the playoffs at the 2016 Worlds that we actually took the bronze at. So, and knowing our record against some of the other teams too, I think the only team that we didn't have we hadn't beaten the last time that we played them going into the Olympics that was going to be there was Scotland. And I think that's because we hadn't played them yet. That particular team, we'd never, for whatever reason, played them on tour. But, I think Korea maybe had a win against us the last time, but everybody else, like we had a really good record against those teams out there. So anybody that asked us before the Olympics what our odds were of meddling, if I was being honest, I told them I think it's 50-50 just based on our records against these teams. And the one thing we knew in the back of our minds, besides that we'd finally beaten Kevin Cooey, we were 1-8 against him, but the last game before the Olympics, the Canadian team, was mm-hmm. Was the first time that we beat them. So technically we had a winning streak against them.
Right.
But in the back of our minds, no matter what, was we thought, you know what, the one thing we have going for us is our record against Sweden. If we play Nicklaus for gold or in the semis, we love our chances. We were 4-0 against them our last four going into the Olympics. They beat us in the round robin when we were playing well. But if you're somewhere able to find these things, if you go on Curling Zone and look at our records against those teams, our finish in the world championships and things like that, then you knew that we were in the hunt. And the Olympics is different than the Worlds too, where the world championships is used to be at that time four qualifiers and it's a page system. So one plays two and three plays four. Mm-hmm. The winner 1-2 goes to the final. The loser 1-2 plays the winner 3-4. And then the winner of that game goes on. So if you finish third or fourth at the Worlds, then you needed to win three in a row to win the World Championship, whereas the Olympics is a straight semi. So if you finish third, as we did, we played the second seed, Canada, and we won, and we went to the final. So we didn't have to win three in a row from the three seeds. So the Olympics actually gives the medal contenders, but not the favorites, a better chance than the World Championships does just based on where you expect those teams to finish in the round robin. So, I mean, you could take into account a whole bunch of different things that gave us a chance at the Olympics. And I think your 16-1 number based on all those things, that's a pretty good bet. And I'm glad we could make it work out for you. You probably owe me a beer.
I definitely owe you a beer. That's why you need to get down here to Kansas City at some point. But I'm also pissed now to know that somebody got better odds than I did at 20-1, but that's all right. I'll take
it. Yeah, well, I don't think there's a lot of consistency in the sports books with putting odds on curling because
we
know more as players than they ever will about what's likely to happen in those games. But, hopefully then that holds for the future for events too, because it's really easy to get sharp action in on curling.
Yep, Yeah, we'll have a few phone calls before the 2022 Olympics, that's for sure.
Under the table, yeah.
So yeah, and there was no chance in hell I was hedging by the time it came to the gold medal match. And, you know, as you said, you guys had played against Sweden. You had a good record against them. And it was, I mean, I'll be honest, it's 2 a.m. and my nerves are just like, am I going to be able to stay up for this? It's late night. And I'm like, there's no way I'm not going to stay up for this. Right. And my nerves were there. It was 5-5. You get into that famous eighth end. You guys had hammer at the time, you know, and for those of you that aren't as knowledgeable about curling, that means they had the last shot. And that was a big advantage with just 3 ends left. And Nicholas gets down there. He throws his last shot. And he wants it to get buried behind that rock a little bit more and get a little more roll off of his shot. And he didn't. And you are calling the shot at that point because you're the vice. So you see that happen. What goes through your mind at that point when you realize Nicholas did not hit his shot and you guys had a chance at 5?
You know, it's funny. I mean, I get asked that question a lot, and I'm being completely serious when I tell you I don't remember thinking hardly anything for the first 7 ends and 15 shots of the game. And then when he didn't get that roll and we knew that we were going to have a chance for 5, then that's when your mind starts going places. That's when you can start, you know, thinking things, remembering things, because you want your mind to be blank before that. You're thinking about the game, but you're not thinking about outside circumstances. You're not thinking about the magnitude of, you know, what happens if you win or lose or anything like that, ideally. You're not thinking about the millions of people watching on television. You're just trying to stay focused on the task, clear your mind, and do your job. But then that shot comes up, and you know, for me, I can't do anything about it except don't mess the line call up. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting in the house, and I distinctly remember thinking to myself, "Come on, Johnny, just one time, you know, make this one." Like I might have even said it under my breath. I don't remember, but. The good thing that we had in that spot was that he didn't have to make the double for us to still get a good result. Mm-hmm. If as long as he doesn't miss it wide, we're getting at least 2. Mm-hmm. And if we score 2, we're probably 80 to 90% to win that game at that point anyways. So there was a good side to be on, but obviously the 5 ends the game for us. That's it. So I was thinking, I just so badly wanted him just to, you know, let it go at the broom and then, you know, let me take care of the rest. And when he let it go, I thought, all right, long as we got the line read right, he's got it made, because it was exactly where it needed to be. And it took one little move, maybe like halfway down, and then the sweepers got on it. It held its line, and then, I mean, we called clean for the last 20 feet, which mm-hmm. on a double is a pretty unusual thing to know that you're on that good a line that you don't have to do anything. Clean means we have the shot made. So yep. Just make sure nothing gets underneath the rock. Just keep it right where it's at. So to see that at that point and, you know, and thankfully be right, yeah, it was a very strange feeling. And then post make, I think I pumped my fist so hard, my arm went numb from my elbow to my hand for like 2 or 3 minutes. Thankfully, we had a bit of a break. And that's when your mind starts racing. Like instead of thinking, you know, just do what you're supposed to do, take care of business, focus, whatever, you're thinking, oh my God, we're about to get a gold medal. Don't mess up. Mm-hmm. And funny story, I actually did a charity event with Darren McCarty of the Detroit Red Wings about a year after the Olympics. And I had to ask Darren, because he was in that same spot in Game 7 of the Cup Finals with the Red Wings, 2 goals up. You know, what goes through your mind? I had to know other athletes that have been in that spot. Mm-hmm. So I asked him, when you had that lead, what went through your head? And are we allowed to swear on this thing?
Of course.
Okay, just making sure, because the direct quote, I need to. So I asked him, what were you thinking? And without missing a beat, he says, don't fuck up, don't fuck up, don't fuck up. So that made me feel, you know, quite a bit better about that too, because I know that's what we were thinking. Mm-hmm. But you're not thinking it because of the magnitude of the game, you're thinking it because something happened that you never would have expected. You know, 5 points in the eighth end, your mind is not ready for that. That's like the one thing that you're not prepared for, is to put up a huge end and have a big lead. You've been playing a tight game the entire time when no team was up by more than two, and that was early in the game. So it's so nip and tuck, just trying to stay focused on doing the little things and that tunnel vision. And then the five happens, and then your brain goes into don't fuck up mode. So I think I had my only real miss of the game in the ninth end because I rushed and I didn't go through my processes. And that was my fault. But other than that, it was one of the best games I ever played. And I'm thankful it happened in such a big spot. But yeah, the thoughts that enter your mind at that point, you're just trying not to fall down. I mean, you're trying to get through the end of it, and I made the last two in the 10th, and I just took this deep breath because my second was basically the one that ended the game. Mm-hmm. As long as, we don't fall on our faces, we're going to win. But, John, for his last shot that he would have had to throw if Nicklaus didn't shake hands, he would have had two chances at a wide open hit. I mean, he's never, ever, ever going to miss both those shots. Right. One of them is pretty much an impossibility. So that's why Nicklaus shook in that situation too. But once mine came to a stop and that was it, then I took that breath and I looked at the ceiling and I think I smiled for the first time. And I looked at John and he looked at me and we both broke out in a big grin at the same time. We didn't have to say a word. We didn't.
Yeah.
But, because we knew in that moment that was it. That's the end of it. And yeah, thank God we didn't fall or anything like that up to that point. The thought does enter your mind, that's for sure.
So after the medal ceremony and you got your gold medals, how long did it take you to actually take off your gold medal?
We pretty much, except for when we slept, I would say we wore them for about 3 days straight. Because we wore them the entire day after the medal ceremony, and we wore them throughout the day in Pyeongchang still and Gangneung, doing all the interviews and all the media stuff, which was nonstop. We didn't get any time to celebrate. It was until I think the first night, about 1:30 in the morning, was the first time we actually were done with all the media stuff. We got to see family and friends and the women's hockey team, who had been celebrating for 2 days already.
Right.
And all of them were at our game drinking beer the entire time. We'd become very close with them throughout the couple weeks we were there. Mm-hmm. So, to find them afterwards at the pub across the street and get to party and celebrate with them was, man, that's pretty good stuff there. Just gold medalists, finally soaking it in and congratulating each other. And yeah, that was incredible. But, we wore the medals back home all the way through the flights and everything too. And for the welcome back that we had at the airport, I think they finally got a rest that evening. We still had to bring them with us basically everything we did for the next year. But for the consistency for the first couple of days, they were pretty much attached to us. And those things are heavy, man. I'll tell you what, we didn't expect that.
That is awesome. I don't know that I would ever have taken mine off, but yeah, that is that's awesome. That's so fun. The other thing, though, getting back to the power trip, that we should probably give you a medal for, you are probably the most underrated initials player in the history of power trip, because our good friend Brandon, who runs the power trip initials account, I went and looked on his site. You played five times. You won three of the five. So you win 60% of the time you're there. And for people that think you're sandbagging against an easy crowd or something, you've gone head to head with AJ twice. He beat you once, you beat him once, and you outscored him in those two matches. So I think you deserve some kind of medal for that, because percentage wise to go in there and win 60% of the time against that crew, I think they're scared of you.
Yeah, I like to correct that stat too, because one of those five appearances was against my own team. So it technically wasn't a real initials game. It was against my own guys. So if you're talking about playing against the other members of the show, I'm 3 for 4. And that's an important statistic to me. So I go with the 75%, not the 60%. But the only loss I had was in studio with the big boys, and they gave me some shit for that, because they said, oh yeah, now that AJ and Paul are here, then it's not so easy, is it? But then I stuck one on them when we played in Marshall the first time at the brewery. So that legitimized it. I think that's when they started to give me some more cred. I think the first one was against Hawk and Parrish and Kevin McDermott and Ole Sheldon from the St. Paul Saints. So, yeah, that one, you know, I mean, not quite the A squad, difference to Paul and AJ, but yeah, getting two wins after that with those guys around, it's a feather in the cap. And I'll tell you what, man, sitting in studio and playing is a lot different than sitting at home and trying to do it like over the radio. Like when you're sitting at the table and you got the headphones on, the mic in front of you and those other guys around, the tension in that room is ridiculous. Like as fired up as they get about it, that is not a bit. Yeah. They are invested in that. They want to win badly. So getting those wins there, that did mean a lot to me. Yeah. With not playing since, or at least for a long time. Last time I was on, I won, I believe, too.
Yep.
Could be a fear factor. Could just be busy schedules. I don't know. You know, if they throw the invite out there at some point, then I'll probably listen. But, yeah, it's not something where you talk your way back in. You just take the invite where you get it. And, you know, if they want to call down the thunder, they know where I'm at.
Well, I think it's intimidation. I really do. But it also begs the question, how the hell did you lose to Schuster?
Yeah, I don't know. I know we were really hungover that day. I don't say that's an excuse because I've performed under those circumstances before. But, yeah, I don't – it was just maybe a different setting. And John's a sharp guy, too. It's not like it's a gimme with him. He's played once since – I think he got 2 points against the big boys. So, I mean, he had I think it was 2-1 or 2. I don't remember. But those are smart guys. That's not a gimme. And they know the show. So they're prepared for it. So it's not like you're playing against guys that have never heard it before. They were ready for it. And Lance Steiner listens a bunch. Joe does too. Hamilton, I knew it just from us listening to it. But, yeah, I don't know. Just some days you just don't have it too. It's just you know, one of those things that some initials click for you and some don't. But that day just wasn't there, I guess.
Now, did you get a copy of Corey's initials game?
I have not gotten one, no. I figured that the masses wanted to get the limited amount of those things first. I didn't want to take up a copy that somebody else could have when I can just go in and win the real thing, you know.
Well, you'll definitely have to get a copy because it's fun. I've played it with my work team, and it's cool to I had to host it because obviously I felt like I had an unfair advantage since they had never seen the game before. But yeah, you'll have to get on that. I think you'll be successful with that one as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things. I could buy a tabletop curling game and play that and win it, but I mean, I've won the real thing, so. Right. You know, same thing with initials. I've been in there and done it. So,
for sure. Well, the other game that you sent out a tweet within the last week that, you know, just when I think, you know, you've got the whole curling thing going, you got the whole sports thing going, the betting thing going, I come to find out you're a fan of The Price is Right too. it couldn't get any better than that. Have you ever been to a Price is Right show live?
No, I never have. I used to watch all the time. That was actually just a rare occasion that I think I'd been watching golf the previous day on CBS and turned my TV on, and it was on that channel. And this psychopath was on there that, like, from the first moment you turn on, like, I need to see what this guy's going to do. And as luck would have it, like, he became a viral sensation, I guess, too. I tried to help that along. But, no, I've never been to the show in studio, but my aunt actually did. God, it had to be maybe 30 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And she got up on stage and played hole in one.
Oh, and, my gosh.
And she missed the first. This was before they give you two tries. Mm-hmm. She only got one. But she missed the pricing like after the first item. So she had to do a long putt. She's not really a golfer. And she left it on the lip. Like it sat on the lip for a van.
Oh.
So, yeah, not a happy ending for her there, but my other aunts were in the studio with her watching too. So yeah, claim to fame. That was the family TV claim to fame, I think, before our little fiasco in South Korea.
But, wow. Yeah. What is your favorite Price is Right game?
Probably Plinko. I used to create my own Plinko boards back in the day as a little guy because it was so much fun to watch, and obviously not to the quality that they had it on the program, but still, yeah, it's you see iterations of that particular game all over the place, you know, just because it's so entertaining. So yeah, I would definitely say Plinko. But I mean, as an avid Price is Right fan, nothing ever got you as excited as when Golden Road came on there.
Oh,
the very rare occasions that it was on, that was like, you know, this is a big day, you know, because you know it's going to be something huge at the end of it. Oh, and that game was near impossible to win too. It was all random chance. So
absolutely, like the fourth number in a sequence of five numbers, and do that like three times. It's like, yeah, that was definitely the unicorn game to win.
Yeah, sure. No, that was the one that got everybody jacked up. Like you told everybody in the house, like Golden Road's on, and then everybody shut down what they were doing for the next 5 minutes to see what was going to happen and what that final prize was going to be too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was always something like a luxury sports car or something crazy, but yeah, so much fun. Well, the one other thing I wanted to ask you about was with sports coming back now, you know, we got baseball underway. Twins are doing well. We've got NBA starting up tonight. We got, you know, hockey and football right around the corner. What are you most looking forward to, and are you betting on anything?
Yeah, you know, I'm a baseball guy, so I've just been really happy to have the Twins playing every day again and have that in my life. But it's kind of funny, you branch out into other sports when you don't have other options. I've been watching a lot of UFC, which is not something I normally do, but when you don't have any other options, all of a sudden you become an expert. And I certainly still wouldn't put myself in that category, but I really enjoyed watching it as something that I really didn't get into in the past. It is a chess match in the cage, as violent as it is. You can appreciate the skill of these guys and you know, the strategy that they have involved in these matches. It was, you know, a lot of fun to watch. But for the upcoming months, I mean, I think still baseball playoffs, especially with the new format, that best of three first round is going to be crazy. Because I mean, you could take the White Sox are a great example where they might end up being a 7 or 8 seed in the AL, play against the Yankees or the Twins or somebody like that. And Giolito goes out as their ace and wins game one. Now all of a sudden you got to win two in a row against that team or the number ones out of the playoffs. So it's going to be wild. You know, you could see some big upsets just because of that short series. And I'm sure that the Titans of the game, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Astros and those teams are not happy about this format change, even for this short season. I think it's fair because of the number of games that they're playing to allow more teams in the playoffs. But yeah, to have a best of three in the first round where you could lose one game to an ace, mm-hmm. they might not have anybody else, but then it's anybody's series after that. So it's going to be crazy. That first weekend or whatever it ends up being of those games for the first round, I might not leave the house for like 4 days. That's going to be so much fun to watch.
Glued to it for sure. Yeah, no, it's it's interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a league change their format for the playoffs that late before the start of a season. It's going to be crazy. And you know, who knows? I'm hoping, you know, the Twins, last check, they were about the fourth or fifth favorite to win the World Series, and I'm hoping that, you know, we can navigate this a little bit and really bring some enjoyment to this 2020 year.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be a lot different than what we're used to seeing. And I think the players are kind of thrown for a loop too. You're seeing some goofy stuff out there for the first week of games. But yeah, as a fan, it's late July right now, and that's basically what it is for the season too. So yeah, this is roundabout where we'd have your trade deadline, and you start to get excited about the guys that the Twins are never going to trade for anyways, but you hear rumors that they're going to try to. Right. So at least we don't have to go through that right now. But yeah, you're kind of in the pennant race every single day, which mm-hmm. has never been the case for baseball before. It's more like a college football season where every game matters. You know, it's obviously not to that degree with 60 games still, but more so than it's ever been for baseball. So, mm-hmm. you know, having, you know, the off day where you say, we just didn't play that well that day, you really can't, or those stretches where you're not playing well as a team, you just can't have those now. You know, right. Whereas in the past, it was something you have to brush off and just come back for the next week. That could be the death knell for your season right now. So I think it's a strange mix of teams playing with an incredible amount of urgency from day one, but not having people in the stands. So, you know, trying to keep that intensity up without having the real atmosphere that they normally have for these games is going to be really interesting to watch for the next 2 months.
For sure. Yeah, I still haven't gotten used to that. I watched the Wild preseason game and then the some of the Twins games, and it's just, it's so weird to not see any fans, anything in the stands, the white noise.
I don't like the crowd noise being piped in either. It's really gimmicky. It sounds bizarre because when they turn it off, it's complete silence. So mm-hmm. you're going from something to nothing all the time, and it sounds weird. It doesn't sound like real crowd noise. So I would prefer just to hear the crack of the bat, let it be something different for this year, and get rid of the crowd noise altogether. It doesn't sound right. I don't think it plays well for the game.
Yeah. The last thing I want to mention too is I'm assuming that sales at George's Liquor are through the roof during this pandemic, as the good people of Duluth are finding a way to cope with quarantine.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I think it's starting to slow a little bit now for the simple reason that a lot of people don't have jobs, you know, on a more somber note. Yeah. So money's starting to wear a little bit more thin. Now the federal unemployment is off the books right now, and you know, hopefully they'll get that figured out so people aren't forced to take chances to go back into the workforce, and they're able to be safe until it's okay to get back out there. And you know, putting people in a position where they have to decide between risking their health and risking their pocketbook is not something that we should ever do. No. So you know, I hope that they can figure something out soon. You know, obviously people are in a lot more than they used to be. So yeah, numbers definitely went up, especially for the first couple months, because there's a lot of board time. You
know, oh yeah.
You don't have much to do. So booze can fill that hole in a hurry, and it's a slippery slope to go down. But yeah, people have been really good about supporting local businesses with that too. And we certainly appreciate the city of Duluth and the surrounding area for continuing to support George's Liquor. I really hope that we can figure things out sometime in the near future here, so that people are able to continue to live their lives the way that they're used to, at least, you know, as much as they can, and not worry about trying to figure out if they have to go out and find work when it just may not be safe to do so. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe we can finally get the powers that be to make a decision that's in the best interest of the American people instead of the people in charge.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's just not been a fun 2020. That's for sure. I'm glad it was the Summer Olympics that got canceled, though, and not the Winter Olympics. If we're going to lose one, I'd rather lose the summer at least, or hopefully they'll have it next year after all. But that was, I would not be a happy camper if I lost my Winter Olympics. Cause I think, the amount of Winter Olympics I watch versus Summer Olympics is about 10-1. So
I'm partial to the Winter Games myself too. They got a soft spot for me.
Just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to get this pandemic over too, so we can get your butt down to Kansas City and show us how to curl down here. So,
yeah, it'll happen sooner than later, as soon as we can get out there. It's just a matter of the circumstances. But yeah, as soon as I'm able, I've been in touch with the club president, the Kansas City Club, and we'll make it happen one way or another. But just as soon as it's safe to do so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Tyler. It's been so good catching up with you. And Power Trip Nation, remember who the winningest initials guy is out there. And maybe we'll get another opportunity to see Tyler show off his brains when it comes to the initials game.
Hoping. Yeah. Sometime soon on that too. But the boys got my number. They know where to find me.
All right. Well, that was awesome of Tyler to join. He is a great guy, and hopefully he can get back for some initials in studio when things get kind of back to normal a little bit, because I don't know about you, Dave, but I have a feeling that AJ and Sauce are a little bit scared of Tyler George, and that's part of the reason we haven't seen Tyler on for an initials game recently.
He has been dominant in some of his appearances. So, yeah, I definitely think that they are, just trying to forget that Tyler is even an option for the initials game. But
yeah, just go to Brandon's site for Power Trip Initials on his little website where he tracks all that information. And see how dominant Tyler really is. So, be cool to see him back for that. So. All right, well, that will do it for this week's episode. For those of you looking for a quotes notes open, I'm so sorry. We're not going to have one this week. But Quotes Notes will be back next week with a very, very, very special open. I can guarantee you that. But in the meantime, Dave, where can they find you at?
You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at PowerTripQuotes.
And I'm, of course, at PowerTripBets. You can find me at Bovada and betonline.ag all weekend long. Thanks for listening. You guys have a great night.
Thank you for listening to the Bets and Quotes podcast. Be sure to give us a rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you think we're hideous, please lie.